at Vices Radio Network.
Drugs and Stuff is for informational, educational purposes only. And this program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES at checkout. Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. The show is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES at checkout for additional savings on awesome supplements that you probably would have bought anyway. Dave, what is up, man? You like that intro?
I do.
I made that up myself.
All on your own. I'm impressed.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm getting very professional here.
No, don't get too professional. It won't be the same.
I'll keep that in mind, man. How are
People
you doing?
Keep telling me I need to be more professional in my videos, and I just said, yeah, but it won't be. It just won't be the same if I'm not fucking up and making mistakes.
what kind of mistakes are you making in your videos? Because I don't see you making any like grand mistakes.
I just tend to ramble.
Oh, okay. Well, you're passionate and you get talking.
They could be more concise and they could be professionally edited and all that crap. It ain't happening. You've got a backdrop. That's as far as it's going. Piss off. You're not getting them all.
I like the backdrop. Yeah, before you didn't have the backdrop, and then we did video and I was like, oh, wow. He got real professional on me here. I like the backdrop.
A little bit. Just a little bit. I was like, life's not bad, mate. Not the best working week, but, you know, you get them, don't you?
Yeah.
Let me see. Had some movements professionally. Spoke with a school last week, and we're putting together some trial presentations for them.
Really?
Effectively, what we're going to do, we're starting with a staff presentation on the old weed.
Okay.
And then they're also interested in steroids and supplements, a pupil presentation on weed and a few other things. So the staff presentation would probably happen quite quickly.
Okay.
But the other stuff probably wouldn't get worked in until after next September. And one of the problems with working with the school is because of the curriculums, you're sort of always working 4, 5, 6 months in advance to where you're going to be doing something.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Because the terms are structured and everything. So
they don't just wing it.
No, but the sort of deal is we're gonna work with the, what do they call themselves now? Safeguarding team. Fuck's sake. fucking names. Anyway, we're working with the safeguarding team to develop some presentations. They're getting them FOC, but then they're going to help network us into other establishments and help us with pricing and costings and that sort of things.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Schools don't have any money, but certain budgets have money.
Okay.
So if you approach topics in certain ways, you can tap into funding from other areas, but you've got to have the right keywords and the right sort of angle on presentations. So, see, we could do something about weed and it'd be like, well, that's drug harm prevention. There's no budget. But then we could do something about weed and mental health. Exactly the same presentation, just add mental health into it.
I see.
Into another budget where we can pull from.
What do you talk about when it comes to weed?
We use a bit of a mix of humor and real life and science. So we talk about what it is and the different forms of it, particularly stuff like spice, synthetic cannabis.
Oh, okay.
We talk about how it acts within the brain. And we have a bit of humor as to, you know, getting the giggles, and there'll be a few stupid stoner videos of people off the tits and you know, possibly use a couple of Cheech and Chong references.
Okay. Off their tits. That's one we don't use over here.
Yeah. So a few, and then, but we also do the serious stuff. So one of the people I work with the presentation is someone who basically started smoking when they were 12, was thrown out of their home at 15, failed all the exams at 16, because of the weed smoking. He's now 20 and he's only just starting to get off their habitual weed smoking.
Yeah.
And not everyone gets addicted and not everybody has a poor relationship with weed, but we discuss the motivators behind it becoming a poor relationship, and how to recognize if your relationship with a drug is deteriorating.
I love that, you know, because I feel like so often, Dave, we just get told drugs are bad, period. I like what you're saying. There are people I know that can recreationally use marijuana to get high here and there. Yeah. It's never a problem. Then there's other people where it's going to mess up their lives.
Oh, what I use as a great example of is alcohol. Alcohol is active ingredient is ethanol. Ethanol is a poison. There's no two ways you can change that.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is the chemical ethanol is poisonous. The reason yeast excretes it is because it is a toxin to yeast. It's a waste product. It's basically yeast shit, what you're drinking.
Okay.
But the fact is, as human beings, we have very strong coping mechanisms. We do have coping mechanisms for alcohol. And as long as you're sensible and you respect the chemical, it can play a role in your life. Yeah. And there are positives from drinking alcohol with socialization, gift-giving, icebreakers, that sort of thing. But too much becomes a problem. And the old adage of, you know, the difference between a medicine and a poison is dose.
Mm. Yeah.
So we look at warning signs. We look at how it works in the brain. We look at when you've got to start recognizing there may be problems occurring and coping strategies and just try and ask people to try and be a little bit honest with themselves, which is difficult with any drug because part of the reason you use the drug is because it masks these thought processes that you have.
Yeah.
And you feel like shit when you haven't got it because it starts to replace normal coping mechanisms. So it's that sort of stuff. But we definitely don't do the just say no, drugs are bad. We explain the negatives of drug use. We explain the implications they have on you physically and mentally. And we show ways of recognizing if you may start to be having a problem with your drug use.
I love that. That's cool.
And if so, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
And the hardest thing for anybody in drug use is to recognize that there may be an unhealthy relationship with that substance. Because none of us like to look at ourselves and accept that we're doing something harmful.
No. Or that we don't have control over it, you know.
It's just simple things like, you know, oh, weed's a medicine, weed's used, it does this, it does that. And it's like, whoa, no, look, let's separate the two. You know, you've got CBD, you've got THC. CBD has a lot of medical uses, yes. Even THC has some medical uses, but it's not without its risks.
Yeah.
And it's THC is the element that's going to cause the major problems, but you've also got to accept the fact that you're smoking it.
Mm, yeah, that's a good point.
It gets hotter and gets deeper. Because of the nature of how the plant's grown, you've got to look at potential bacterial carriers, fungicides, this sort of thing, bacterial insect infestations in weed because it happens.
Huh.
So there's all the, and it's just misdemeanors like, you know, smelly wet weed is good weed. No, smelly wet weed is rotten weed, and you're paying by the weight, so you're paying for water, so you're being ripped off.
Really? Huh.
You know, bits and bats like that. You go to the weed connoisseurs of the world, which is Amsterdam, you go to the World Weed Championships, and you will not find one bit of wet weed.
Huh.
It's all dry, because that's how it should be. So stuff like that, you know, we look at mite infestations and all sorts of things that just, you know, if you get, and then we look at spice, and spice is a bit naughty because you don't have any control over strength of the drug.
Okay.
And the number of deaths associated with spice is alarmingly high. In the UK alone, it's over 2,000.
Okay, hold on a second, because I've heard this word spice before. I'm out of the loop, though. I don't know about the new drugs. Is that the synthetic
cannabis?
Okay, that's what I thought. That stuff, I've seen videos of people on YouTube that smoke that and go nuts.
Yeah, it's the problem with it is that the material that you smoke isn't the bit that gets you high. That's just a combustible material, usually some sort of plant matter.
Okay.
It's sprayed with a chemical. It's the chemical that gets you high. And the problem is that spraying is very ad hoc. And therefore, in one little piece of one little batch of spice, you can have an area that's super concentrated with the chemical because of how it's been sprayed on.
Yeah.
So three people can smoke the same joint, and the third person can hit that bit that's super concentrated and could be completely fucked up.
Wow.
There was Skid Row. in Chicago, I think it was. In 2 days, they took, they hospitalized 55 people on Skid Row because there was a strong batch of spice hit the street.
I didn't realize it was that popular. I didn't know that.
It's massively popular in low incomes. It's massively popular in prison because there's not an odor until you smoke it. And even then, there's not always an odor.
Okay.
So clandestine, where you need to cover up the use of it, it's very, very popular. And it's as low as $1, $2 a joint. So that also makes it very popular because it's cheap.
Oh, wow.
But it's very unpredictable. Very unpredictable. One of the videos I use is a kid basically dying on spice.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
He takes a smoke. He ends up convulsing. He ends up going into spasm, swallows his own tongue, and his mates panic him. But that stoned, he can't do anything. And his other mate's just videoing it because he didn't know what else to do.
Holy shit.
He's just locked into doing that one thing he's doing already, which is videoing, and it videos him basically dying.
And the kid did pass away?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
the
video
was out before that point when I show it, but that is the result of what happened.
Wow.
And it's a surprisingly high number in the last week in Illinois alone. I think 3 or 4 people died of spice.
Jesus. Have you heard of that drug called, I think it's called Crocodile?
Yeah, the Russian thing that's made from basically kitchen cleaner.
Yeah, yeah.
Highly addictive, zombie-like effects, and your skin starts to just die.
Yeah, it's scary,
that's
man. You know,
anyway, we're doing a trial with a school on that stuff, so hopefully.
Interesting.
But we try and make it a little bit of fun as well, and we take the piss a little bit and use stupid videos, you know.
Yeah. I like it. It's what you're talking about is different than 12-step, which I've been heavily involved in my life. I'm sure there's some crossover, but I like your approach. I feel like it's a little bit more real world friendly to maybe let people understand it. Cause I don't know. I feel like people get scared away from 12-step programs real quick. Versus what you're saying, you're kind of letting them figure it out for themselves, which is what they need to do anyway.
There's an element of that, but I think there's an element of you can't say somebody who's using weed as a coping mechanism, which is one of the reasons people turn to drugs generally.
Yeah.
Or if not, it becomes a coping mechanism. It's how you deal with your stress. I've had a bad day at work, I'm going to have a glass of wine. I've had a bad day at work, I'm going to have a smoke. I've had a bad day at work, I'm going to have a joint.
Yeah.
Bad day at work, I'm going to take a pill, you know. And you can't remove that coping mechanism by saying, well, drugs are bad for you, you can't have that.
Yeah.
Without
yeah.
giving them something else to replace it with.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a coping mechanism. So if I remove your coping mechanism by removing your drugs, then how do you cope? Because you don't know how to anymore.
Yeah.
So, you don't know how to cope with a stressful situation, so you then got to give them something to replace that with.
And well, yeah, how do you present that to them?
Well, there's lots of different ways, but the first thing is recognizing that it is normal to feel like shit. It is normal to panic. It is normal to be scared.
That's huge.
You know, it happens to everybody. I've had a really crappy week where I've literally had to force myself to sit in my desk and work through my workload because all I wanted to do is go fuck it and go back to bed.
Yeah.
But now I've got the bulk of my paperwork out of the way, I can start being more positively productive with the rest of the week.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so it's stuff like that, and you've got to... But we also like to punch it with a bit of humor because... People watch these presentations and they switch off.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you add comical elements to it, so we have a video, which is an old video now, which is starts off as a documentary produced supposedly by the Canadian Wildlife Association. And it's what happens when you give spiders drugs.
Really?
And it ends up with the crack spider taking the weed spider hostage, stealing his girlfriend and then shooting the heroin spider in the back of the head and all sorts of shit. But it starts off really seriously and it's like, well, this spider webs is the spider that was given caffeine and the spider's really erratic and fast at weaving his web.
Yeah.
And then it slowly starts to get silly. So it goes, and the marijuana spider didn't make a web. He made a hammock and slept all day. And, you know, the cocaine spider decided that making webs was for suckers and stole the caffeine spider's web by shooting him in the back of the head. And it all gets a bit daft. So we use that video. Then there's a cartoon we use of it's a cartoon sort of stick men character that comes on, gets a table, does a line of coke, enjoys it, then snorts up the table, then snorts up the scenery, then snorts up himself.
Okay.
And the catch line at the end is, drugs will snuff you out, drink beer instead.
Huh.
And so it just it breaks it with a bit of humor, but there's a serious message at the back of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you'll probably be aware of Ali G, or you'll be aware of Borat anyway.
I know Ali G. I like, yeah, he's great.
Well, Ali G did an interview with at the time was the Leeds advisory to the government on drugs.
That had to be good.
And it's just a piss take. And he's asking him, so what's the best weed to buy and what's good to buy, you know, well, and how much would you pay for that? And he gives a price. Well, yeah, but you'd be getting ripped off if you pay for that, wouldn't you? Because my mate gets it for the, you know, it's that sort. You're typical Ali G.
Right, right.
But it's really funny and it sticks in the kids' heads.
Yeah.
So we sort of interject it with humor like that and then follow that with a serious point. And the point then it gets attached to the humor and the memory.
That's cool, man. It's cool to see you doing this. It's beyond bodybuilding. I feel like it's nice to see you giving something to the community, because even if you touch like one, you know, individual at one of these talks, you could change somebody's life, really.
Yeah, well, I've seen what it can do to a kid, and I've seen how damaging that can be to the family, and I've seen how damaging that can be to the kid, with the kid not knowing where else to go with it.
Yeah,
and it's just been a natural progression of stuff we've got into, and we're looking to bring the steroid and supplement talk to the schools as well, but we need to satisfy their immediate problems first before we can start looking into other problems that may not be such as a big issue for them.
That makes sense. Did you know kids in your high school that were using steroids?
No, it wasn't really. I mean, got to remember, I'm 50, mate. So
yeah,
it wasn't the same. And we didn't have the same emphasis on sports like you do in America. I mean, I went to America when I was 16 and spent 12 months at a college over there, high school over there. So I saw firsthand the heavy emphasis on American football and on track and field and on performance from kids at schools as well.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly when you start looking at scholarships and the pressure that... So obviously there was a much stronger driver there for steroid use, whereas in the UK it was just recreational use in the gyms to be a bodybuilder. There wasn't really that drive at school because there wasn't really a benefit for it for what we did.
That makes sense. I knew two kids that did, just, and I know that there, some of the football players were, but when I was in junior high, I had learned how to lift weights from my dad and his friends. And so when a couple of other kids wanted to learn how, I showed people. So they'd come over to my parents' house in the basement and we'd work out together. And one of them kept doing it. He became a firefighter. He's a good guy. Another, he got into gear though, in high school. And then he got another guy into it, and they were both into competing, you know, at the teen level and stuff. But yeah, I just, all I remember, man, was how uneducated I was. And I remember asking him about it, and he told me, well, we have one pill that you can take, and that'll get you cut. And then we have a different pill that you can take, and then that one will get you bigger. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
I'm guessing D-ball and Winstrel, you know?
D-ball, the breakfast of champions.
Yes. Hey, in other news, you are you're going to be part of Body Power this year officially, right?
Yeah. No, I say every year I'm not going, but this year I actually am officially going. well, it all started. I'm very, very good friends with Rich Foster that owns Strong Nutrition, who we do the Support Max product with.
Okay.
And he was, like he always is, trying to get a deal. So he was negotiating with Body Power on stand prices and decided to prostitute me.
Okay.
So offered them that I would do a talk for them in terms for a reduction of his stand price.
Oh, okay.
Didn't happen. But they did show an interest, and I'd heard mentioned through the grapevine from another couple of people that they were potentially interested in doing a steroid talk this year.
Oh, you'd be great for that.
And I know Medichex last year pushed this forward, but they wouldn't go with it. Now, last year I ended up doing a couple of talks. I did one with Scott, actually. I did one with Dr. Scott because of a no-show, and Jordan couldn't attend one because of a family illness, I believe. And so I stood in for him, and then Dorian couldn't be asked, so I stood in for him on the Bodybuilding Evolution stand. So Mike's asked me to talk again on that this year.
Nice.
But he's not sure what on.
Okay.
But no, I'm in official communication with Body Power about actually doing a talk on steroids, which would be the main presentation area, I would assume. They've changed the layout a lot this year, and I'm not too sure of what's going on, but I believe they've got like a health zone.
Okay.
So they're sort of sticking health-related businesses in one area. So yeah, it looks like it could potentially be a busy one for me this year, but the person I'm dealing with is on holiday till next week, and then he's going to touch base with me, and we're going to schedule up what they want covering, and I'm going to put something together, and then I'm going to get them to approve it, with it being the topic it is.
Uh-huh.
And with Body Power hitting such a wide base of people, I'm going to make sure that they put the seal of approval on anything I do, so there can be no, well, we didn't know you were going to say that crap come back at all.
Oh, yeah.
And because, yeah, I've seen that one before. So, but it's, I'm pleased. It's not the first time I've seen it done, but if they are going to go forward with this, it's a genuinely positive step forward that they're actively looking at offering at least the basics of health support and advice when it comes to drug use. You know, it's a big part of the industry. We can't deny that it's not. And it's good to see such a huge organization actually step forward and go, you know what? We have a moral responsibility to offer at least safety information regarding the use of these drugs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird to me too, because I feel like it's even legal over there. Why not talk about it? If it was illegal, then I could see that being one thing where it'd be more taboo. But
the problem is, it's a fine line being talking about it from a harm reduction point of view to actually starting to advise on cycle.
I see. Yeah,
got to be very careful there, because you know, a big organization like Body Power promoting somebody that's going to discuss what you should use on cycle.
Yeah.
There's a big liability issue there.
I can see that.
So it will obviously be harm reduction based. I'm guessing it will probably be quite 101.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know where they want to go with it. I don't know how far. And it might get to the point where it doesn't take off at all. But I will be there. And I'll be on the strong stand this year. Anyway, it's about time you got your ass over and stop fanning about.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I got a fannying about. I like that one. I got to get over there, though. I want to see it. Scott got me jealous last year. It sounded like he had so much fun. And I know him and Jordan were both a part of it the year before. And we have a lot of listeners over there. I'd love to get a chance to hang out with everybody. So there's a big expo with all this, too, right?
Yeah, there is. I mean, look, I don't think it's a patch on the Olympia or the Arnold or anything like that.
Sure, sure.
But it's the biggest we've got.
Yeah.
It probably is a little bit over commercialized, but if you hunt around, there is some quality there, and I'll definitely hook you with where to go stand wise, where all the cool kids are hanging out.
All right.
To be honest, I think if you seriously want to come over, I think Richard would be more than happy to probably give you a little bit of standing room at his place, so you've got a base to work from.
Oh, nice, nice. Well, but when is it? You said it was in May, I believe.
I think it's, you know what, I haven't got a bloody clue. It's normally around the 15th, 16th of May, but I'm sure someone told me today it was earlier. So I will look and I will let you know in 2 seconds. Body Power 2019 is 10th to 12th of May.
Okay, cool. I think I might have, I have to look to see when Junior Nationals is. It might be right around that time, and if so, I'll have to be in Chicago. But I would love to make the trip. I mean, I'm not going to talk about it anymore right now, okay? Because I don't want to talk it up and then not do it. But it's something I want to really consider. Because you know what I'd love to do is I'd like to make a bigger trip out of it and get to check, you know, the UK out a little bit more. Go see some gyms. You got everybody I talk to from the UK, you guys love your gyms. And I want to see these places for myself.
You can always stop at mine. I'll squeeze you in somewhere, throw one of the kids out for the weekend or something. So you can always squeeze in at mine, mate. But obviously north, which is not, you haven't got the same sort of concentration of the super gyms as you have down south.
Okay. How far are you, say, from like King's Gym, for instance?
200 mile.
Yeah, that's a drive, isn't it?
No, you're American. You're used to this shit. You drive miles, don't you? Come on.
Well, here's what I hear, though. I've talked to you guys in the UK, and what I understand is driving 200 miles here is different. It was Aaron Hudson told me that, you know, we've got all the big freeways that are open and straight versus you guys are driving on, like, actual roads with, you know, homes and everything else on them.
The big problem is traffic, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, you know, the actual distance and the speed limits mean potentially it's a three-hour drive.
Yeah.
In reality, it's very rarely less than a four and a half.
I'll tell you the truth, though, man. Never having been over there, that would be a fun, exciting experience in itself, just driving 200 miles through the UK.
You'd be driving on the motorway, so all you'd see is roadworks and shit, probably. Oh. I don't see anything particularly impressive, but there's, I mean, London has a good concentration of some real quality gyms. Obviously, you've got King's, you've got Muscleworks Orpington, you've got Rip Gym at Basildon, you've got Monster Gym at Chesham. You know, there's some really good quality, decent gyms. You've got Crayford Weights and Fitness, Paul's gym down near Dartford. So there's a lot of decent gyms in that neck of the woods.
Nice. I can pick up some new slang while I'm there too.
Yeah, you learn to speak English properly.
All right, man. Well, hey, what do you say we take a quick break and come back and answer some questions?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, guys, we'll be back in just a second. Hey, guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip Blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows. Hey guys, I wanted to take this break to say thanks to Dave for everything he's doing here at ADVICES Radio, and thanks to Dave for everything he's doing for bodybuilding as a whole. You guys can check out more of his stuff. Go visit his website. It's crosslands.org.uk. That's crosslands.org.uk. Crosslands Harm Reduction Service specializes in providing concise, informative, and effective drug training to a wide range of professions, as well as advice to individual users. You guys can also check Dave out on his YouTube page, which is in the show notes, and also go to underconstructionthefilm.com to purchase the films today. Use the code ADVICES25 for a discount. All right, guys, and welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, Scott McNally, and today we are going over to. What was that? Is that your ringer?
I'm sorry, that was something on the phone that shouldn't have gone off and did, and I don't know why. Yeah, I've silenced it now.
What was that ring? What was that ringtone?
It wasn't. It was some advert thing that popped up. I don't know why it popped up.
Oh, okay. we're over at Facebook today. But what we're going to need is more questions, and we could use questions for all the shows. So I implore you guys, head over to the forum. All you got to do is go to advicesradio.com. There is a button for the forum. You can click on that, and there are stickies for threads for each show. We got the drugs and stuff thread, as well as threads for all the other programs. Think of some good questions that we can ask Dave here. We can always use more Dear Davey questions. I think we had a good one for Luke last week. That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think asking Luke relationship questions is dangerous, though.
Yeah, that was good. Today, though, we are over at Facebook. We've got a thread that Dave posted up a week or so ago. We got a bunch of good questions over there. Real easy one to start with. It depends. I don't know. You might have some good information on this. Trenbolone and stamina. You ever have issues with that, Dave? Getting short on breath?
But then I've never been fit enough to notice the difference. But my understanding with this, and this is one of those areas of trend that we're not right sure.
Okay.
Chen seems to have an impact on blood vessel constriction within the lungs.
Okay.
This causes a reduction in the lung's ability to push blood into push oxygen into the bloodstream, and therefore you get a notable downward turn on your cardiovascular ability. And it is this same action that causes notorious Trenkoff. Now, the problem with Trenkoff is a lot of people get mixed up. If you get a cough post-injection, that isn't Trenkoff.
No, really.
Post-injection is because some of the fluid you've injected into the muscle has got into the bloodstream, and the benzyl alcohol is aspirating through the lung, which causes a constriction of the lung. So you get a more immediate impact, which gives you an immediate restriction with breathing and causes you to cough, dry irritation sort of thing.
I've had that. It's terrible.
True Trenkoff is a persistent cough that sits in the background and irritation.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know this. So you're telling me this is not just at the injection, which that's what I always thought Trenkoff was right after you take the shot.
No, Trenkoff is a sustained cough that continues ongoing, but a lot of people have, for whatever reason, it's just slowly got bastardized over time, and people now regard any cough post-injection as a Trenkoff, and it isn't. That's because you've got the fluid into your lungs. Well, you've got it into your bloodstream, and it's aspirated through the lungs.
I had the worst luck, man, for a while, where it didn't matter. I was using Tren, but I also, even when I didn't take Tren, with Masteron and Test even, I was getting a terrible cough like once every 3-4 shots, and it would just mess me up.
It lasts anywhere between 5 and 20 minutes. If you get a real hard hit,
yeah,
you'll probably get a metallic taste in your mouth, and you'll be sat on the end of the bed sort of thing, struggling, and it can be quite concerning. Because you get a real strong cough and you can feel quite shitty.
I've gotten it to the point where I feel it starting to come on, and so then I stopped pushing the gear in.
Yeah.
The first time, though, and thankfully I read the boards and everything, I knew what was happening. But man, I'll never forget the first time I literally walked in the bathroom and I was literally stepped. I mean, I tried to walk to the sink to get some water, down to my knees. My gums, everything in my mouth was just burning. I just like saliva just pouring out of my face, and I'm just like gripping for about 2 minutes. Like I thought I was going to die.
Yeah, it feels like that.
It does.
Don't take PGF2A then.
Oh, I've heard bad stuff about that one.
Very similar, but worse. Oh, you really think you can't breathe.
That does not sound fun.
It's awful, but it's a similar sort of action. It aspirates through the lungs, causes a restriction in the lungs, which basically starves you of oxygen for a short period of time. True Trenkoff is a sustained irritation of the lungs due to Tren. And from what I can work out, the best I can come up with is it is to do with some sort of constriction within the blood vessels in the lung, causing a reduction in oxygen going into the bloodstream, and this is why it also affects your cardiovascular ability as well.
Okay, interesting. Have you ever had that?
I never really, visible sort of immediate side effects and Tren, I didn't really get anything. Got a little bit of a grumpy twat.
Okay.
A little bit of that emotional detachment that you can get with tren. Cardiovascular, didn't notice anything, but then I was never particularly fit anyway, so that was probably why I didn't see much of a downturn there. Didn't get the night sweats, didn't get the vivid dreams, didn't get a tren cough particularly, got a little bit of a dry cough, very mild for a period of time, but nothing that was in any way an issue.
Okay.
And generally got through tren with those sort of symptoms relatively symptom free. How much of an impact it had on renal function and that side of things is difficult to really say post, but
yeah,
whether any of that was down to tren itself or not, I'm not sure. There's studies coming out now and case studies of acute kidney image from tren balloon, but nothing that we can hold up and say, yes, tren damages your kidneys. But my personal belief is it does.
Okay.
And that seems to be a belief that's growing among renal specialists slowly but surely.
Hmm.
You find that nephrotic syndrome, FSGS, is now described as a bodybuilding condition more often than not, which is obviously a chronic kidney disease. There's growing links with usage and kidney deterioration, and there's growing links with tren and kidney deterioration, but as yet there's nothing that's strong enough or proven enough to go, yes, it does this.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I personally don't see what all the fucking fuss is about with tren myself, but that's just me.
Hey, you said, I was listening to one of our older episodes, you had said that if you could do it again, if you were to change anything, you probably would have stayed away from it.
Yeah, I would. I didn't see any benefit from putting it in.
Okay.
I felt better and got better results off DECA. And I think that was because I wasn't as toxic as I was on tren.
I could definitely see that.
We've touched on this a few times where toxicity gets to a point where it becomes a negative influencer in growth.
Yeah, I can see that. Hey, you know, backing up to the last episode, I agree with mostly everything you say. There was one area I would argue, and I'm not saying like, well, my way would be better. You had said that you prefer to bring the drugs down at the end of a diet. And my thought was always that you bring them up. And I thought about it more, and I wanted to explain it a little more. I try to keep the drugs as low as possible early in the diet so that when you get to the end, you aren't taxing your body because you aren't, you know, you're not on higher doses for an extended time. That was my solution because I remember you said that your thought was you didn't want somebody to be so toxic at the end, and that's why you'd bring them down. I just try to not get them toxic in the first place.
Okay, then let me ask a question. So what is the benefit of increasing the drugs at the end?
We're dieting harder. We're pushing harder. We're going to get better muscle retention and just a gnarlier look with more say with, you know, we start out with test and then later in the diet we add Masteron and then tren and then finally we'll say Winstrol or Halo. For the last few weeks.
Something like adding Halo in or adding Winstrol in with its anti-estrogenic properties, I can see where you would see a change in physique from that drug being there.
Okay.
Because you're going to dry out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The lower progesterone as well is anti-progestogenic, is anti-estrogenic. So you're going to really dry out, which I fully see where that would have a bonus.
Okay.
But my question is then, do you really think that going from 500 milligrams of total drug intake a week, for argument's sake, is going to have that much more of an impact on muscle retention than 750 milligrams would?
I can't say, you know, I really can't. You know, I think you're probably right that the difference will be minimal, but it'll help with strength and possibly overall appearance. And yeah, I'm not saying add the test, but maybe add more tren or more Masteron, say, for instance.
I can see the point. I just think that you can manage those effects through your diet just as effectively. And the danger I feel about trying to push the strength up at the end of a cut is that technically you're very weak.
Yeah.
So it's an artificial strength you're creating, which puts you at higher risk to injury.
For sure. I think that you could argue that for sure.
And I just think you'll feel so much better on the day. You'll be so much healthier on the day, and you'll enjoy the day so much more if you're not completely hanging out your ass because you're drugged up to your eyeballs.
Yeah. And I wouldn't want somebody to ever feel that way. You know, I'd want to work it up to the point where we were still comfortable, but you know what it is too? There's I feel like
there's a middle ground, and I agree with what you're saying in that essence, that there are certain chemicals added at the right time that can have a dramatic impact on the physique, but I don't necessarily feel you need to up the dose. You just need to change compounds.
I could go with that. Yeah. Like you said, go into like a Winstrol or a Halo. I will tell you, man, I remember I did the dumbest thing the first time I took Halo. I was maybe 10 days out and I was squatting 3 plates for reps when I had only been working with like 2.5 plates on each side for reps previously, like the previous weeks. So I was using heavier weight than ever for like my last leg workout before the show, just because the Halo made me strong enough to.
And I think there's also, you've got to remember that I tend to come more from a health and that angle rather than potentially delivering the most optimum physique on the day.
That makes sense. But I think, you know what, though, I think you have a really valid point, too, though, is that by focusing on that health, I feel like you will look better. You know what I mean? If you can stay healthy.
I think the big issue with a lot is not so much what you deliver on the day, and you may, you know, you get two physiques, you get two twins, genetic profiles exactly the same.
Yeah.
You run higher, harder drugs on one, you run a lesser is more approach on the other, and the one with the higher, harder drugs could potentially look that a little bit better on stage on the day. But I know he's going to feel like absolute shit for the 3 weeks following and look like an absolute sack of shit for the 3 weeks following. Mm. And it would be the rebound you're getting off the guy who hammered the drugs harder. So there is a lot of factors to play into this as well as to how you want to go with this.
Fair enough, yeah.
And I suppose it all ends up down to the individual at the end of the day. I mean, my big issue with all this stuff is, I'm not saying it's right, I'm not saying it's wrong. All I'm saying is get yourself fully informed of all the facts and then make the decision that works best for you and your risk and reward ratio.
Yeah. Yeah, I just forgot to mention that because I was like, hey, there's
no, one. I think you've got a valid argument. I do.
Yeah, I was like, because I always, you know, I always agree with everything you say. And then I realized I was like, hey, there's one thing. We can bring some drama into the show by disagreeing sometimes. I'm looking at the thread here. Next question we had. Nandrolones cause anxiety for this guy. What can he do to combat that? And I'm guessing he's asking, what can you do to combat that besides stop taking nandrolones?
The problem is the way nandrolones act upon dopamine and D2 receptors and on serotonin transport.
Okay.
Now, what has been shown with nandrolones is that it affects the, keeping it in very simple terms, it affects the reward mechanisms within our brain. So you don't get the same thank you chemically in your brain for doing something that would derive you as pleasure.
Okay.
So what they've seen is when you put that in recreational drug use, they'll find that someone who uses a nandrolone uses higher amounts of recreational drug to get what they describe as an equivalent high.
Mm.
And you find then that you don't get the same reward mechanism that you would for things that you would normally give you pleasure.
Okay, we discussed this off air before we spoke to Luke last week. This is fascinating, man.
Now, most of the studies have looked at the impact on recreational drug use because obviously that's a major concern.
Okay.
you know, if someone is a recreational drug user and uses nandrolone, there is a much greater risk of them ODing or taking a lot more than they normally would to satisfy their normal appetite for that drug. But it carries over into everyday things as well. So things that you would normally get pleasure from, things that you'd normally enjoy, that reward is just lessened. So you just don't get as big a buzz of driving a car fast or whatever it is you would normally do. And that's where you get this low level depression sort of thing and effect coming in.
Okay.
It has much more complex impacts on depending. I always call it a maglodia. Scott calls it a different pronunciation, and I've been told I pronounce it wrong. I don't give a shit. That's how I say it. Tough shit. But it has an impact on the neurochemistry within there and the signaling processes within there, which again in turn can affect our moods and anxiety. Particularly, nandrolones are shown to have impact on cannabinoid receptors, and we have cannabinoid receptors in several parts of the brain. Which in turn can cause us. Now, one of our natural stress mechanisms to cope with stress as a human being is to seek company.
Okay.
That's a natural inbuilt mechanism that we have to deal with stress. When we feel stressed or we feel low, we seek company. We seek the company of others. The impact of nandrolones on the CB receptors prevent this mechanism from occurring. And if anything, actually drive us to the opposite effect, where we don't seek company, where we seek isolation. So all these play a combining role to cause depression and anxiety whilst using nandrolone. Now, previously we'd always, and the old famous of run test higher than your nandrolone site thing, part of that was born out of the fact that DHT has a neuroprotective factor within the brain.
Okay.
As science has gone on, we've realized that we don't actually need doses of DHT to be that high. And a lower dose of DHT will just be just as effective. So that's where we get this now 250 to 500 mega test against up to a gram and a half of Deca. But what I was looking into the other day, and I still need to do some more reading it, there's been some interesting studies with EPO. Now, most of us know EPO as the drug that increases red blood cell count, very popular with cyclists and enduring athletes. But apparently, EPO has a very strong neuroprotective quality in the brain against nandrolones. And it's shown that a low dose of EPO actually prevents a lot of the negative mechanisms that nandrolone have within the brain.
Really?
I can't give you a real-world dose in because I don't know, and I need to read up some more and see if this study's back with any secondary studies or anything supporting it, or if it's just a one standalone study. But, so it would appear that EPO could actually work quite well as a preventive measure against nandrolones causing depression and anxiety. So there you go.
I'm going to tie this question in. I don't know if you have anything else to add to that, but because it kind of covers some similar ground. A guy named Peter says, would love to hear your opinion on the effects of steroids on brain chemistry. I recently heard about a study on the effect of serotonin dosing changing the answers people gave to moral questions, and was wondering if compounds such as Deca and Tren can permanently alter our personalities.
The most recent studies, and I'm a bit rusty on this, have shown permanent physical changes in the brain.
So that, okay, wow.
Structural changes in the brain. Permanent brain cell damage. Neurodegenerative conditioning from steroid use. And
I thought I was getting dumber, Dave. I thought I was getting dumber.
Well, you know the old stereotype that steroid users were dumb and aggressive?
Yeah.
And we all fought against it. Actually, there's a lot of truth in that. Long-term steroid use will make you more aggressive and will make you that little bit dumber.
Fuck, I knew it.
There was a lot shown in scans that came out of Oslo University in Norway. Ingrid, I can't remember the last name, who sort of ran the studies. But it showed that the actual size and density of the amygdala changed. It showed that not so much aggression, and this is where it gets very complex, because a lot of people go, oh, steroids don't cause aggression. And I myself preached that for a lot of years. But the fact is, they do. But what changes is actually the trigger mechanisms and our control mechanisms for aggression.
Really? What does that mean?
So, well, basically, it doesn't make you any angrier. It just means that you get angrier at different stuff.
Huh.
So your total level of aggression is still the same, or there or thereabouts, but you may reach it sooner, or it may be triggered quicker, or it may be triggered through mechanisms that it would normally not have bothered you.
Okay.
Coupled with that, you know, go on gear, get bigger, get stronger, get more confident, get more outspoken, particularly if you've been somebody who's previously sort of hid away or taken a back seat or even suffered to some degree of bullying or intimidation. You're going to be more outward spoken. You're gonna have a power trip, you're gonna be more expressive, and that can manifest itself as aggression and that side of thing. You know, the bully turning into a bully sort of situation.
Yeah.
Because he now has a mechanism that allows him to do so. Yeah. Or he's now confident in himself because of his drug use to do so. But it does change the control mechanisms of how we cope with, deal and trigger aggression within the brain. It changes the signaling routes. It changes how those signaling routes are dealt with and the strength of those signaling routes as well. The other thing is, I think I've touched on this before, nandrolones have, all steroids to a degree, but nandrolones particularly have a massive impact on neuropeptide Y, which is used in abundance in forming new memories. And it substantially reduces levels, so we struggle to form new memories. And we struggle to transition short-term to long-term with memory as well. And it's one thing. I mean, the other thing is, obviously, these things come about when you've had 4 or 5 years plus of steroid use, which for most people is going to put them into the 30s. For people like myself, you know, I've been using, right, not continuously, but my usage spans over 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm nearly 50, so it's also an age where you'd expect my memory to be a bit shitter, and that obviously does confuse the situation a little bit. I mean, there were some studies done on trenbolone, and they were actually done not so much, though there was recognition of recreational use, but trenbolone metabolites get into the food chain, both in beef cattle, particularly from the States where trenbolone finiget is used as a muscle-enhancing chemical for the beef trade.
Yeah.
But it also gets into the vegetarian food chain through urine and feces from that cattle.
No kidding.
So it gets into the food chain two ways, directly from the beef you're eating, but also from animals that eat the vegetation in the fields where the cows have been. And as a result, it will get into the food chain that way, so it will get into rabbits and therefore predatory animals of rabbits and obviously humans, if there's people in the area that hunt rabbit.
Yeah.
And it was shown that these growing levels of trenbolone metabolites in the brain were showing wear and neurodegeneration similar to that of Alzheimer's. And this is what born the suggestion that tren caused Alzheimer's. And there's never been a study to show that tren causes Alzheimer's, but there has been a study to show that tren created brain damage in a pattern that was very similar to Alzheimer's.
Okay. That's kind of terrifying, man.
So there you go.
Yeah, that's kind of terrifying.
It's early days. The thing is, when people say, oh, well, that must have been people that use shitloads, I think the dosing range for the people in the long-term study, and this is a 4 or 5 year long-term usage study.
Yeah.
Most users were cyclic, and they were averaging between 1 and 2 grams total per cycle.
Okay.
So we're not talking your 4 or 5G guys here. We're talking what would be termed as your average users.
Right, right.
I mean, there was a few that used more. There was a few that used less across the board. But I think the average sat somewhere between 1 and 2 grams. I mean, I can dig the studies out. I do have them if you wanted me to go into them in more depth.
No. I think you've covered plenty here, man.
But yeah, they were done. There's been stuff done. They've shown a modulation of tryptophan and serotonin due to anabolic use. That was done by Cardiff University in Wales. And I'm sure I've got some other studies somewhere. I'll have to dig into them and see where they are. But yeah, there's definitely a lot going on in the brain and a lot that we're still learning and we still don't know about.
Okay.
I think as time comes on, you'll find more and more information coming out about impacts within the brain.
It's a foreign idea to me, the effects on the brain. So I think anything that we could learn from this could really, I think, help all of us.
Yeah, it's like a lot of things, isn't it? I mean, you know, alcohol affects the brain, smoking affects the brain, and we have an ability to deal with a certain amount of that. But if you keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing, obviously part of what I do, because I do harm reduction, I watch a lot of people's social interactions and also not just on social media platforms, but in person when I get the opportunity. And I see changes in behavioral patterns in people that I know are long-term heavy users.
Mm.
And I don't always know why, and I can't always pinpoint it, but I still see an element of paranoia and irrationalism moving into certain people.
Mm.
So there will always be those it doesn't affect. There will always be exceptions to the rule, that goes without saying. And there'll always be those that are more sensitive to it and have problems very easily, and there'll be those that are less sensitive to it and don't have problems at all. But am I a dumber person for using steroids? Yes.
Mm.
And I know that particularly with what I do, because it does require a lot of research. It does require a lot of memory stuff, and I struggle.
Okay.
It does make my working day harder because of me struggling with those sort of things. But again, it's that, you know, you've got to make a personal decision, and a lot of people will be like, oh, I'll be fine. And one of the nasty tricks of this is it sort of covers its tracks.
Okay.
So as you go along, and particularly again with nandrolones, they increase our desire to take risk.
Nandrolones do.
Nandrolones do, yes, and they change our perception of risk.
Really?
Yeah, and this is extreme, and I fully admit that this is the very far end of problems. But I have had the unfortunate, I don't know, in a way, because it was a great learning curve to work with a few people who were suffering quite dramatically on nandrolone use, and they both have a pattern of destructive behavior. And when you speak to them and you say, so did you want to kill yourself? Did you want to take too many drugs? So they went, no, I had no desire to kill myself. Well, why did you do it? Why were you taking so much of this or so much of that? I said, because I just didn't care what it did.
Hmm.
But it wasn't, I said, so you wanted to die? No, not at all. I didn't want to die. I didn't have any suicidal thoughts. I didn't feel like killing myself, but I just didn't care what happened.
Yeah.
One of this manifests itself, though it manifests itself in drug use and the person striving to take more and more steroids. Another one was in driving. A lot of what was a common trend with these people who were in heavy, heavy nandrolone and starting to struggle with it was that they had a fascination about what would happen if they drove their car at high speed into something or someone. Now, they didn't want to kill themselves, but at the same time, they had a very morbid curiosity and a very strong urge to drive straight into a wall at 60, 70 hours. And it's like, well, obviously, surely you want to kill yourself. And they're like, no, not at all. I didn't feel suicidal. This really strong urge to know what it was like.
Wow.
So then, didn't you recognize that that would potentially have been a terminal action for your life? And they went, no, didn't. Hmm. One was injecting super high amounts of insulin. And they were actually found comatose off the insulin and were rushed to hospital and spent several weeks after that in psychiatric care. And I'm pleased to say they've made a full recovery and live a very normal life and are doing very well for themselves now. But when they were questioned and said, well, were you trying to kill yourself through insulin overdose, which is incredibly difficult to do, they said, no, I just wonder what it would be like. Mm. And I think they'd shot up somewhere in the region of about 90 or 120 IU of insulin at that point.
Oh, my God.
So, and those are extremes, don't get me wrong, and the people that we're using were using in the grams. But there is definitely, you see it to a lesser degree where people are less concerned about the impact of what they do. Hmm. They start to get a little bit flippant about the drug use or about how much they use, and this is definitely a trigger from nandrolones. The mechanism of what causes this, I am yet a little bit unsure about, but I've seen it too many times to know that there's a link. There's something going on. Yeah. What it is, don't know.
All right, I'll move.
Each case, every person denied that it was the drugs that were having an impact until they'd finished using drugs.
Really?
And then when they looked back using the drugs, they said, without doubt. Yes, huh. I can see it now. But at the time, no, I couldn't see it. It was almost like the drugs had their own agenda in covering up the damage they were doing, which is obviously not true. But it does impact our reasoning in our brain. It does impact our thought process around risk and our risk assessment. So obviously it is almost self-propelling. You're going to end up using more.
Yeah, I could see that too. And it's not the first thing I would think, you know, when we're talking about, you know, drugs like steroids.
No, it's not. And we are talking high doses, you know, so let's make that very clear. I don't want everyone that's ever used Deca or Trend to suddenly think, shit, I'm going nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? But, I mean, at the same time, if you're having extremely vivid dreams because of the drug you're taking, and those dreams are actually to the point where you're fantasizing about things that disturb you, which is very common in trend users. A lot of trend users report that I'm having these really vivid dreams and nightmares where I'm thinking about doing some quite sick and twisted stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
That's the point. It's making me feel uncomfortable. Then you've got to think, well, surely what I'm doing is having an impact in my brain, or why would I be thinking like this?
That's a good point.
You know? So, I mean, it doesn't. It from what I can gather, it doesn't change our ability to control, but it changes our perception of what we need to control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alcohol does something very similar. It's quite weird. Alcohol has obvious physical effects, but mentally it also changes our perception of how we view certain things. And yet, presented, well, they've done tests where they've got medical professionals or people with medical training absolutely blottoed, and then they've presented them with a medical emergency, and they've just acted like they were sober.
No kidding.
Click, bang, done, on the job, got it done. And yet at the same time, they've given people non-alcoholic drink but suggested it was alcoholic, and they've stumbled and fell over and can't stand up.
Yeah.
But they've had no physical effects of the alcohol because they've not drunk any alcohol. So why are they acting in this way? So the brain is a real complex piece of engineering that can really trick us in so many different ways, depending on our thought process and our perceptions around what we are doing. And we're so much still to learn about these drugs.
All right. I'm going to move on to the next one, Dave. I don't remember us talking about this, but he says in episode 14, you mentioned Anavar increases T4 to T3 conversion. Can you elaborate this and how it does that?
Not off the top of my head, but I will make a note to go away and reread that and come back to you with the science behind it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. That sounds good. People really appreciated when you went back and you researched about estrogen control and eyesight. They really liked that information.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, my memory's fucked. So I do remember snippets of things, but I don't always remember the reasonings or the mechanisms behind, and I have to go back and double check and just like, rather than give information that's not correct.
Sure.
I'd like to go back and double check.
Okay, I'm gonna kind of spin this next question because we've already discussed in depth the difference between an AI and a CIRM, but he also throws CABR in the mix. He wanted to know what the difference are in these PCT drugs, and he names off Nolvadex, Clomid, Aromacin, Letrozole, and then he mentions CABR. Now, we've talked about the others. We haven't talked anything about CABR. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, CABR is not a PCT drug. That's the first thing.
Sure. It's a good start.
It affects dopamine, and in that then causes prolactin to lower. Mm. I'm not sure what really more than that somebody wants to know. Cibergoline is dopamine receptor D2 agonist, which means it impacts D2 dopamine receptors. So it has the effect within the brain of increasing dopamine levels.
Okay.
Because it triggers the dopamine D2 receptor, and that in turn lowers prolactin. But it's generally used. Most people mistakenly think CABR is needed with just NOR19 drugs. It's not. All steroids raise prolactin. And if you actually do testing, and if you test prolactin, which we all should be doing, you'll notice that your prolactin levels increase with every steroid.
Mm, okay.
So prolactin is not necessarily just a side effect from NOR19s. It happens with testosterone. It happens with Masteron. It happens with all steroids.
No kidding.
Yeah. And quite often, this is why when people start going on about estrogen sides or sore nipples, I always suggest that you test your levels and see what the trigger is.
Hmm.
Because if it's not estrogen and it is prolactin-based, now a lot of people would argue that prolactin cannot cause gyno because people with prolactin here don't get that problem, but I have seen on numerous occasions gyno symptoms subside with the addition of CABR in somebody's protocol.
Mm.
So there's definitely something going on. But if you have high prolactin or higher prolactin and you've got medium estrogen and then you take an anti-estrogen and slam your estrogen to the floor, that will trigger a balloon in prolactin.
Okay.
Because it starts to act in the same as it would in the female within the menstrual cycle with pregnancy. So estrogen goes high, prolactin goes high at the back of it, then estrogen drops, and that triggers lactation.
Okay.
So they have a little bit of an agonist-antagonistic relationship to prolactin to estrogen. So if you always slam estrogen low, you're going to push prolactin high.
Hmm.
So rather than guesswork, test, see what's going on, and then administer the drugs according to what's actually going on, not what you think is going on.
That sounds too logical to me, Dave.
Yeah, I know. We're not very logical creatures, are we? We tend to be very illogical. It's when you step out of the box and sometimes think about the things we do, you just think, fucking idiots. But I've done it myself, been there myself, done it myself. I think we all go through a stage of that. But as I've got older, I've saw. And the other thing, it's more cost effective as well because you're buying only the drugs that you need instead of buying drugs that you might not necessarily need.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. Saves a lot of money.
Blood testing now is so easy to get access to. It's not like it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know how you guys have it over there, but we can just order it online and pay out of pocket and just go up to the lab and have it taken.
We can, and you know, it's not super expensive. I mean, yeah, you know, a prolactin test or an estrogen and prolactin test is probably going to set you back somewhere between 40 and 60 quid.
Okay.
But when CABR's like 40 quid a tub these days or whatever it is, I mean, it's a fucking fortune, it's CABR.
Yeah. Yeah, that stuff is not cheap.
And it's like rocking all shit to get hold of.
I've heard too, tell me if you've heard this, that it's not stable in liquid form.
I've never seen it in liquid form.
Yeah, you don't see it too often. You'll see it in the some of the research places have it.
I've seen the thing is with PCT drugs or estrogen prolactin management drugs, there's such a strong underground market. You should have no problem with getting legit pharma grade quality drugs.
Okay.
And if you're buying UGL, stop being a cheap ass.
I've used some good UGL Arimidex from like some of the bigger name UGLs, not just like somebody making caps in their basement. But overall, you know, you make a really good point, especially over there. But you know, Dave, we don't have a lot of the availability unless we're to order overseas here for a lot of that stuff.
Do you struggle? Right, I wasn't sure because obviously TRT prescripts are pretty liberal over your way.
They are, but getting involved with it, you know, you have to get your lab work done. It's a process to get on in the clinic, and a lot of guys don't want to do it because they want to keep cycling, so they don't want the doctor to know that their labs are going to be jacked for the next, you know, 16 weeks or whatever. So a lot of people aren't on TRT through a doctor here, and it seems like, especially the younger people, everybody I know, there's a huge amount of people that are getting their PCT meds from a research site.
Right. We've got a growing number of private prescription services over here, which is making it a lot easier for people to get on TRT.
Interesting. Okay.
Because they literally just supply bloods with low test levels. That then gets sanctioned by a private company through a private prescription service.
Oh, wow.
I'm on private prescription TRT. I've never been asked for another set of bloods.
No kidding. Wow. And you actually get testosterone through this company.
Yeah, but I don't use any more either, so I wouldn't be bothered if they did want to see me bloods, but they've never asked for them.
Yeah.
There's never been a follow-up wanting more recent bloods or anything like that. As long as I'm not taking the piss and I'm ordering what I need when I need it, they're quite happy to just leave me be.
That's pretty awesome, man. Yeah, we don't have that here. They're very strict.
But, I mean, at the same time, I don't order over what I need.
Yeah,
I order three shots at a time, and it gets reordered every 6 weeks.
Okay.
And that's it.
Three shots at a time. Remember back in the day? And when I say back in the day, I just mean 2 years ago. Three shots at a time would be a drop in the bucket.
That would be Monday morning, mate. Before breakfast.
Right.
Yes. When I think back at the huge amounts I used to take, it is a bit like, fucking hell.
I couldn't
imagine it now.
I saw the trailer for just recently. I watched it, the Under Construction 2 trailer, and you literally have buckets of empty vials, buckets full.
Yeah, it's a weird one. How your perception changes when your lifestyle changes, but I get pissed off with doing one shot a fortnight these days.
Oh God, it's a pain, isn't it?
I forget. Yeah. I'll be like, fucking hell, I feel a bit shit, flat. Oh, hang on a minute. When was the last shot? Did it do? How many weeks ago was it?
Oh, bollocks. Speaking of Under Construction, I wanted to mention, we had one of our listeners messaged, or they posted over at our thread at the Advices Forum. He had said that he tried to order the movie using the code ADVICES25 and that it did not exist. So I got a hold of James Grelish, and he said that he fixed it, that the code had expired, I guess. So he had to create a new one.
Yeah, it's still there. It's still for sale. Sales have obviously dropped quite significantly low now. But, I mean, it's been out, 6 years from the first one?
Wow, has it been that long?
5, 6, I'm not sure. It's definitely getting that way. And then 3, 4 years from the second one.
Okay.
So, you know, it's been around quite a while now. And I think it's probably had its day. I still don't like the second one, but it is what it is.
I got one more question here. It's just kind of a vague question, and I'm going to word it exactly how he does. He says, how bad is MK677 for you?
Right. It's like several drugs. A few gobby buggers have had adverse reactions with their BG levels with it, and so it's become the devil incarnate.
Has it really?
Does it affect your BG levels? In some people, yes. And in some people, it can be fairly dramatic, yes. But it's not impossible to control. And for the vast majority of people that I've seen use MK, when coupled with something like berberine, their BG stay well within control and they don't have any major issues. But I also know a fair number of people that have run MK677 and had no issues with their blood glucose levels.
Okay.
So it's not the devil that it's made out to be, and in the right scenario with the right person, it can really make night and day. If you're at the end of the day, we need to eat to grow.
Yeah.
And when you're pushing it, if you really are pushing everything and you're struggling, then that little boost to appetite can make the world a difference to you getting to that next level.
Sure, I could see that.
And it's a sort of irony of it, really. I don't know if you ever had this, but I do remember a time when everybody was jumping up and down about, I think it was Adex, because it had been shown to lower IGF-1 levels.
I know Novadex has.
It was Novadex, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not using Novadex because it lowers IGF-1 levels. And I'm like, right, okay.
Yeah.
And in comparison to test raising IGF-1 levels, and in comparison to ADEX lowering HDL and everything else that's negative about that, you really think that Novadex is the devil because one study shows it lowering IGF levels in a non-exogenous using test person.
Okay.
You know, it's just like it has no impact in the real world because testosterone on its own is going to raise IGF far higher than Novadex is going to lower it.
Okay.
And that's sort of a little bit of the scenario that's happened with MK677. Yes, it may increase your BG levels, but if you're at the level of food in case where you have to have it because your appetite is so shot to shit, you've gone beyond the point where your primary concern is health.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there are far worse things we do to ourselves than take a bit of MK677. But you know, at the end of the day, you still need to be aware. So if you're going to run it, I would suggest you get a BG meter. They're not expensive. They only cost you a few quid. And just keep an eye on your blood glucose levels. And I would suggest running something like berberine, 250 milligrams of berberine with every meal, as just a stopgap if you're going to run MK677.
Have you heard anything about liver stress with MK?
I've not seen anything direct, but that wouldn't surprise me if it's happening. Okay. It's an oral, at the end of the day, it's an oral-induced tablet. It's going to have some impact on the liver.
Yeah, I'd heard of some. I hadn't seen it myself either, though. All right, well, that wraps us up, man. That's all our questions. I'm excited, Dave, because next week, this will actually be coming out the week of the Arnold. I'll be leaving for the Arnold the morning that this show comes out.
Okay.
It's,
are you looking forward to that?
I am. It's going to be a good show. I know we're going to see Luke over there as well as a bunch of other really great bodybuilders. So it's going to be a fun time. We will miss you. We're going to have a live podcast event taking place at the convention center on Saturday morning. Would be great to have you there. If, one of these years, we'll have to get you out here to the Arnold.
Well, you might have problems with my visa, but if you can sell my visa, I will come.
All right. Fair enough, man. We won't ask any further questions about that either right now. Let's get out of here. What do you say? We'll let you get on your way. I'm going to head to the gym, Dave.
You do that. I've got to take my wife to work. I need to eat something as well.
All right, guys. For another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. We will see you next time.
Take care.
Licensed Radio Network.